Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I can't go a day, certainly a week, without somebody mentioning avocados to me, total strangers. So I might as well get the underwear because I've got everything else.
That's very good. But and soon you're going to get sweet potato things, as McManus outed you for buying sweet potatoes.
Right. So. And I can't believe they haven't come up with a song in the words of Desperado. We've already done avocado. I can't believe we haven't done sweet potato yet.
Challenge issue. Well, right.
You're asking right. for it now, Kurt, because it's coming. Sure.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, we are not at Chatter. We're in New York City. We're on West 78th Street in New York City, up a very long flight of stairs that Keith Olbermann had to climb, even though he had knee surgery yesterday. Pablo Torre is here. Keith Olbermann is here.
Oh, yeah.
Nigel is here running the board. I have absolutely no show. Nothing happened in sports last night that I am competent to talk about. If you think I'm doing 15 minutes on the Winnipeg Jets, you're crazy.
I'll do it for you.
Yeah, so tell us what happened.
When I came down to Washington and filled on that other show you did, I'll just do it for you.
Yeah, so what about your knee? What happened?
I have a bad knee. I have an arthritic knee.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at the clock to make sure I don't spend 15 minutes talking about this. Right. Old men complain at 8 o'clock. Tune in. Film at 6. I have an arthritic knee, and it causes me trouble going downstairs, and that's, you're going to be 60. If I live to next January, I'll be 60 years old. These things happen.
Do you know how far 60 is in my mirror?
I understand that. Okay. I'm just saying that my parents, by this point, had trouble walking because they both had arthritis.
Oh, so you think you inherited this?
Oh, there's no question. Oh,
okay.
And then it was inspired, as it usually is, or brought out by trauma, as these things always do. Anyway. Minor. And very fortuitous, and if you're going to have surgery, you want it like this. Every 2 months I go in and get a shot in my knee to lubricate it, this new fascinating, amazing
thing. The platelet therapy?
No, it's just, for all I know, they're injecting me with oatmeal.
I was going to say, you could have lots of Viren's blood coursing through your veins for anybody old enough to remember him.
Oh my goodness, yeah, or Native Dancer, for all I know. They gave Native Dancer, they gave that 50 years ago. It's like, yeah, okay, sure, shoot me up with whatever that is and then pretend it didn't happen. So the shot was yesterday, and in the last couple of weeks, I had a lot of problems. The definition is I have trouble going downstairs, but you're fine going upstairs. Well, suddenly I had trouble going upstairs. So I mentioned this to the doc, and he's making the needle up. And this is just one of these, he's great, but he pays almost no attention to you.
Dr. Bornstein.
No. Although I know somebody who went to him in an emergency.
Really?
Went to him in an emergency. Asked me about that at some point later. Woke up in the ER with him, with that same hairy, crazy-looking guy staring at her as if, oh my God, I've killed her. And then her eyes open and he was like, so the same long hair and the freaking lab coat that he bought at Woolworths. So that's not my doctor. I'm over the HSS guy. So the guy, it's close to that because the guy's partner who I once saw is the official team physician, lead team physician of the Mets. So
he's Matt Harvey's guy.
Dr. Struan Coleman, who once told me before the night, right after the 2015 World Series, when I first met him, he said, I'm the guy who shot up Cespedes in his shoulder right before the series. I shot up Cespedes right before the series with cortisone. And I said, you missed. And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, he pointed out, I got him right there. It was perfect relief, right? Just the dream kind of injection. I said, no, you're supposed to, his heart was where he should have put the shot. That's what was bothering him. He had no guts and heart in that series. All right, anyway. So I go in and I say, and he's preparing the shot. And he says, well, okay, wait a minute. He said, I might have to stick in an MRI to find out what that is. And he just reaches over to where he's about to give me the shot. And he reaches in and he goes, nope, there it is. It's a loose piece of cartilage. And I said, okay, what do we have to do for that? Because the last time I heard about somebody getting cartilage taken out of a joint, it was, and he'll be released in 48 hours or something, or you'll be, maybe it's day surgery, but you're going to be out. He goes, no, conveniently, this excruciating needle that I give you every 2 months, I can move it. It'll hurt more, but I can move it slightly after I give you the juice. And it will, as the thing sucks back, as an injection, as a needle does, I can pull the thing right out, right now. And I said,
out of your body.
Right. I mean, we're
like half something an alien.
Right. But like a half a piece of detached cartilage.
Yeah.
So he did that. And it was a new experience. I was able to see through time backwards to see my grandpa was there. It was very nice. Was like, oh, and my grandfather was still complaining that baseball was fixed. And, it was just the ordinary stuff. And then I stood up and it felt better. Now, it hurt, and it still today, it hurts more than it would, and it'll hurt a couple of days, but it was minor. It was basically minor surgery, and I said, there was minor surgery just now. He goes, yeah, pretty much. So anyway, let me ask you more about who you're dating.
So this is just yesterday, and now you have to, the studio that we're in requires you to climb about 30 stairs. But as I said to you, and you had the similar experience, when I had a bad knee, climbing up was not a problem.
Right.
Climbing down into a sand trap was a terrible thing.
And
did you know that Pablo, everyone in Pablo's family is a doctor? Pablo, you don't feel particularly slighted that Keith didn't go to your family first.
Well, my father is a urologist, so I feel like,
as long as he's there.
Speaking of hitting the wrong spot, that may have been a dangerous proposition.
Yeah, I got a number of those problems too, but I've got a guy I've worked with for a couple of years.
Well, if you need someone else,
thank you.
There's someone who looks like me with my same name who is able to get way more intimate with you.
I don't know. You know the producer of the last ESPN show, Dave Cerosi.
I sit in his abandoned office in Times Square sometimes.
So you know him then too. And he was with me at NBC, and he was with me at Current, and he is now one of the executive producers of Outside the Lines.
Oh,
and I think he is the only member of his endless family. I mean, it's like you're his brother. Haven't I met all seven of his brothers and cousins and his father? And every one of them is a doctor. So it's just...
Well, this is the great thing about Pablo. Pablo is considered a failure in the family because you did not become a doctor.
I am the least educated member of my family.
Nice.
And you would think that growing up as the son of a urologist who would, you know, because urological tools were not urological tools to me. They were just toys.
That's right.
They'd be the things lying around the living room where I'd be, ooh, what does this do? Right? Yeah. And then in retrospect, I think back and realize that was a failure of parenting. I should not have been allowed to touch any of those things.
Right. Or wait a minute. More than just parenting. Have we checked into the licenses of all your family members? Because if they're lying, the urological tools should be sterilized, as I recall from my last operation in that neighborhood.
Because or else they're called medical waste and they've washed up on Jones Beach.
Yeah,
that's a good
scandal
point.
On that.
Now, I'm a bit of a ghoul. I thought afterwards, why didn't I ask for that piece of cartilage? I could have made it into something or at least fed it to the
dog.
Oh,
no, that's eBay. No, absolutely.
EBay. Right on
Keith
eBay.
Olbermann's cartilage.
No,
just
give it to
internet.
The dogs and see if they really liked it. You know, they like other, you know, raw meat. Why not?
So I should tell people, they're saying, wow, why do you have Keith Olbermann and Pablo Torre on? Do they even know each other? And in fact, when Keith did the late night show for ESPN, Pablo, every once in a while, you would do the show.
Well, Keith was...
You would host the show.
Keith was and remains the premier Hall of Famer in the world of essaying, and he had the misfortune of having shingles.
Oh, yes.
And so, I don't know if you look fondly upon that part of your medical history, but that was when I would be called in sometimes.
Can I say something about that? I reached that age, the sort of magic age where shingles, I would pay attention to the commercials on television to take the shot.
Yeah.
And I knew a couple of people who had it, and it appeared to be incredibly painful.
Correct.
And one guy I knew who had it, a friend of mine, had it around his eye and could not close his eyes to sleep.
Right.
And had to essentially sleep with his eyes. The fatigue was such that he had to sleep with his eyes open. And so I went to the local, and I'd never done this before in my whole life. And I was around 60 at this time. I had never done this. I had always, if I wanted to go get a medical procedure, a shot, I went to a doctor's office. And in the place where I bought pharmaceutical stuff, they just said, well, we'll do it here.
Yep.
And I thought that was sort of dicey, but I said, okay. And I took this shot, and I've never, apparently the vaccine works, and I guess you didn't get it in time.
No, but I got it afterwards because you can get it
but
twice.
What amazed me, then this was amazing, and I don't know if this has changed. It seemed to me that as the population ages in America, and you reach that point where shingles become more prominent and you can do away with them, like polio, you don't have to get this. Mm. It wasn't paid for.
Yeah.
It wasn't paid for.
Because
it was a $400 shot.
It wasn't paid for because you weren't old enough.
How old do you have to be? 90?
There's a silver lining to it.
You know, but I was amazed.
Here, I can explain to you the entire history of shingles.
Off the path.
This is great. I'm taking notes. I'm ready for whatever life throws at me next.
Yeah.
This is the medical channel. Good afternoon. Next, we'll be talking about your prostate.
Yeah.
Not anything medically about it. We just want to know how it is. No, it's the reason they don't pay for it is it was explained to me because I had a theory that because I'm sort of at the oldest part of the early immunization period as a kid. I mean, I went to school. I had a classmate who had a polio brace. I'm like the old, the youngest guy who can say that. The picture, and there he is. We never realized that was the case.
It's a little trench footy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I'm just saying that's my age. So I'm right at the cusp where we got all the immunizations. And I thought, well, clearly the reason everybody I know is in their 50s getting it when they won't give you the shot for free till you're like 62 is because the starting of the immune system early on has got consequences that you will. The reason shingles appears is your past case of it's chickenpox, right? It's chickenpox. It stays in your body when you have it as a kid.
And I've had chickenpox,
right? So it's still there. And then when your immune system begins to crap out, it will come out. And the theory was
that sounds fun.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. And the theory is, or is under tremendous stress. People in their 20s get it. A lot of medical students get it because of all the stress of doing that. So you get it, and it comes out, I thought, earlier for my group because we had our immune systems activated early. I'm not one of those crazy people who says don't get vaccinated. Right. I'm just saying there's got to be consequences to it. Instead of your immune system breaking down at 60, it now breaks down at 50 or 55. And a doctor explained to me, no. The cost benefit of simply treating the disease was much easier on the insurance companies until 60. And it may be changing because of that, but that's an insurance cutoff, not a health cutoff.
Well, I got the shot and I've never had the shingles.
Well, good, because David Letterman, my friend Dave was telling, missed a month of his show because of the shot, because he got it again, eye to ear, and right in the center of his forehead. And he was, when we were talking about this, the only time I ever saw him not make a joke for more than like 3 minutes. And we're in that break during the show and he goes, what'd they give you for the, for your shingles? And this is over the band and the crowd and everything else. And I said, well, it was Vicodin and the ordinary painkillers. And he just sort of went like this. And I went, what? He goes, they gave me laudanum. They gave me, he gave him a list of drugs that reminded me of what they were giving my dad in the hospital when he was
Dilaudid.
Dilaudid. Remember that? 7 months.
Was this stuff that the Michael Jackson?
Almost to that point. And finally they gave me methadone. And I went, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't hear you. The band is too loud. It sounded to me like you used the name of that drug that they give heroin addicts instead of heroin to keep the withdrawals. He goes, yep. And every year I have to have a rehash because it comes back like on the anniversary. You get the pain, not the danger to your eyesight or whatever. But he said, he said it was that bad. That's why I wasn't on the air.
So people are listening and they're saying, doesn't Tony usually open with sports?
Yeah, well.
And Tony does.
You had a choice of this or the Winnipeg Jets, and you opted for that.
Because
I got up this morning. I turned on SportsCenter at 6 o'clock. And when Barry Melrose is the first story, you go, oh, I have nothing to talk about today. I can't talk about hockey. I don't know anything about hockey. I don't even remember what the second story was because I was done at that point, and that's why I didn't. Now, the story I could tell is Meta World Peace.
I was asking you
I think
about
I'm going to do that.
Go ahead.
Meta World Peace was scheduled to be on the PTI show yesterday.
Scheduled
to be on. And Matt Kelleher, I said to Matt Kelleher on, so yesterday was Thursday. On Wednesday, Kelleher said, you always want guests. We have Meta World Peace. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, no, tomorrow we have Meta World Peace. And Wilbon's grinning. And I said, why do we have him? And he said, well, he's got a book. And I said, well, we don't usually do that. And he said, well, and Mike said, oh, he's going to be great. He's funny. He's going to be great. And I said, well, I never would have agreed to this. And Kelleher said, well, you actually did. I said, I don't remember this. He said, Frankie suggested it last week. Wilbon was enthusiastic. And we looked at you and you said yes. And I said, are you sure I answered yes to that, to that question? And everybody here was amazed that you did, and we let it go. So he's on tomorrow. Tomorrow now becomes the yesterday in this story. I walk into PTI, when I always do, about 1:30 or something like that, 4 hours ahead of Mike. And I say, well, what do we have today?
I hear some of this, too. I love this part of the story.
I said, and, you know, what do
you
we have today?
You mentioned the sandwich.
Yeah. No. And they said, we have Meta World Peace. And I go, that's not going to happen. Do you have a plan B? And Kelleher looks at me. He said, we don't need a plan B. I said, I'm just telling you now, do you have a plan B? Because I say it's not going to happen. I just don't believe it's going to happen. Now, the lucky news for us is this. He was scheduled relatively early to tape. Like 3:45. That's early for us. Mike doesn't usually sit down to 4:40 or something like that, and then we go.
And then the sandwich. So.
Mike's got to have a sandwich.
Mike's preparation
sandwich. Yeah, his preparation is to get a sandwich. I've been combing Tony over
has
my
his
notes.
Yellow legal pad that he writes in longhand.
I've been combing over my notes for weeks, and Mike comes in with a sandwich.
I envy that bad.
All right, so we have different ways of getting to the show. That's all I will say. They work for him, and they work for me. So we're going to get ready, and at 3:42 or 3:43, amazingly, Mike shows up in makeup, and we're on the set by 3:50, and of course there's no Meta World Peace. And then there was a thing like in my ear, maybe we ought to just start with the A's. Maybe we ought to get the A's done. That's the first block of the show. Okay, we can get the A's done. Now, we get the A's done by 10 after 4, so now we're gold. Because we don't really have to do anything till 5 and still make the taping. It's no big deal. And I'm sitting there, and I'm saying he's not going to show up.
But you promoed him.
Yeah, in the A's. Well, we had a way of getting...
And I'm watching...
We had a way of getting out of that.
But I'm watching that at 5:30 going, why? Why do they have him? I mean, it's like saying, and Keith, you're going to be a sub-host today, and we have your old friend Danny Tartable on the show. Great. Does anybody besides me remember him?
So we got the book on the set. We don't put it up there for the A's because he's going to be in the B's. Okay. So then it's like, well, we just heard from him and he's getting in an Uber and he'll be there at 4:30. And then at 4:10, it's like, well, he didn't really get in the Uber. And this is the happiest I've been in years. I called this. It wasn't going to happen. Now we get out of it. Now the plan B is we have to do Fortune Teller. Which is a segment that Pablo loves. Why?
We get to dress up.
Pablo gets to dress up. Wilbon hates to dress up.
Excuse me.
Keith loves it. Why?
I got to wear a stupid hat.
That's right.
And still look better than my co-host.
That's right. I get to wear earrings and a turban and a shawl, a pashmina. And Wilbon refuses to do any of these things. So we quickly fashion this segment, which is easy to do. And then on the intro, I look into the future and I say, it appears that Meta World Peace will not be with us today. Baller. And so we go and we do the rest of the show. We do the rest of the show. I mean, that was... What are you going to do?
You saw...
And he's trying to... You would think to promote the book.
Exactly. Why was he...
Well, to be fair...
God bless him.
He has promoted the book without having to do the interview.
That's right.
So there, I would like to point out, please... That at considerable expense, our friends at ESPN have installed a home studio with an HD camera in my apartment. So if you're ever stuck for a guest, check and see if I'm around, because all I have to do is go from one room to the other.
So Meta World Peace also would, because I always say, look, I remember him from St. John's as Ron Artest. And I would say to Mike, what should we call him? He says, well, he once told me just call him Ron. But everybody on the set insisted, no, you've got to call him Meta. And I said, do you remember when he wanted to change his name to Whole Foods Guacamole Dip? Which is true. He didn't
really
actually do it. He threatened to do it, but he did change his name to Meta World Peace. Now, I don't know if he... So I guess in the New York Times, on second reference, he's Mr. Peace. I guess. I don't know if he'll ever be on. I don't know. But I know the next time they say to me, how do you feel about this? I'm going to say, I'm going to take a pass on this one. I don't know. That was our story, and I'm sticking to it.
Chris Mullen also lives in my building, if you'd like me to try to talk him into our studio. So
Chris Mullen and Wilbon are close.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're close. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more of this
sandwiches.
exciting
More show. On Michael Wilbon's sandwiches.
We're going to get to baseball, which I know Keith loves. You like baseball.
I do.
And we're going to... Oh, I have to ask you about your show.
Oh, yeah.
Because I heard something. We will start with that when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Indochino ad. Indochino is a made-to-measure suit. You give them your measurements, they make you a suit. Nigel has two Indochino suits.
That's right.
Can vouch for the process.
Yes, it's very easy. Well, now, the proper way to do it would probably be to go to a tailor. But I use, of course, a piece of rope and a yardstick.
Which is the old English way.
Exactly. That's how we do it back home.
Keith, you wear suits. Pablo, you're going to have to start wearing suits.
I will have to dress up like an adult.
Do you, Keith, did you ever have a made-to-measure suit? Or are you off the rack? I'm an off-the-rack person.
No. I actually went in after years of not shopping and spent high into the five figures because suddenly it becomes addictive and got them made to measure.
That's great. Yes. Well, this is Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear company, has been featured in major publications, including GQ, Forbes, and Fast Company. They make suits and shirts made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics, and the option to personalize all the details, including your lapel, your lining, your monogram. I love the word guys. That's why they write it for me, guys. Here's how it works. You visit a showroom. There's like one or two in the whole country, right? There's not that many. There's one. The closest one to me, I think, is San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco. No,
which is not exactly close. Or you shop online. This is the preferred way at Indochino.com. You pick your fabric. You choose your customizations. You submit your measurements. You wait for your custom suit to arrive in just a few weeks. This week and this week alone until next week, listeners to this high-quality podcast can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379 at Indochino.com when entering Tony K at checkout. That is 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, your shipping is free. That is Indochino, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O.com, promo code Tony, for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever could.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Cole Christensen, who writes, as a longtime PTI fan, I only recently discovered the Tony Kornheiser Show. My indoctrination has been swift and immediate. I've been enjoying getting to know the crew and familiar with how all their different personalities coexist to make the show. He's living in Los Angeles. He's cycled through many podcasts across thousands of miles. Tone, rhythm, and feel of your show is distinct. After years of searching, this tortured sports fan finally settles down into a daily routine of escaping the 405 to share a virtual breakfast at Chatter. This is his song. This is called That Road.
That's right.
By Cole and Willie.
Cole and Willie, yes.
You are familiar with this, Pablo, but Keith has never been on this show. People send us their original music.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fabulous. And we play it as bumper stuff. And then at the end of the podcast, you can hear it in full. We've had hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of people have sent in high quality stuff.
Yeah.
So thank you to Cole Christensen on that. I teased this by saying earlier that I was going to ask you, the new show finally has a start date.
It has
with you and Bomani.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on your podcast.
Okay,
though.
Well then don't give the date. But it has a date.
I would
date.
Love to be clear.
Yeah.
Because we do have a start date. We do have many other details about the show confirmed. I understand that when I say that I cannot talk about them, it sounds like we're just running a Ponzi scheme.
Can we talk about the name of the show?
I don't even think we can do that.
We can't do any of those things?
I've heard the name of the show external
both
to
know.
Him.
So
we can protect him by saying we know it, but he may not have been informed.
Okay. That does help the scam I'm running.
But here, well, you've been paid for over a year to do nothing.
That's
fantastic.
Best job in the world.
I'm going to ask us to cut that part out of this podcast.
So here's what I heard. I heard you've done a rehearsal. This was
yesterday.
Okay, so this was relayed to me by Matt Kelleher with awe. With awe. He said they did 22 minutes on one thing. And they could have gone another 20 on it. How long is the show going to be? Like, is it the Jerry Lewis telethon?
So I can say that it is an hour.
Right.
From 12 to 1 p.m. on ESPN1. Right. I will say that it is live.
Yeah.
And I will further note that we are kind of the mutant stepchildren that you and the aforementioned sandwich kneader birthed.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, you're going to take over for us. I mean,
well,
who's kidding?
But not even that. And that's very kind of you to continue to say.
No, later, it angers me.
Later this week.
but, you know, thank you for establishing the precedent of two people talking to each other as a viable form of salary. But that's amazing.
But it's an industry. What are you talking about, a viable form of salary?
a viable form of media?
Well, do you
3%
think
of all Americans have a show like this. No offense. I know yours will be better, but it's still true.
Do you think that at some point someone will say, we got to cut this down a little. We got to get to something else. I mean, what I was told is that you and Bomani were so engaged that not only – and the time went by and nobody was upset. But at the end of it, they said, well, what are we going to do if this is what they do?
Well, it's funny because after we did it, Kelleher asks both of us, how long do you think that went?
Would you say about 4 minutes?
Well, I like Bomani has been like doing radio forever. He also just has some sort of internal computer in his brain that's a pretty good metronome. He nails it, 22 minutes and whatever. And yeah, I'm like, I don't know. 12? Like, this does, I don't have the mechanics for that. And for that reason, I think this may work well, because I just get in there like I am today, and I just talk. Now, I have prepared neurotically for the shows I've done with you. But what I'm realizing is that when it comes to a format that's more open,
yeah,
that allows for digression, it is simultaneously relaxing and totally different.
This is an interesting thing. When we started PTI a million years ago, the only experience we'd had with this type of show was the sports reporters on Sunday morning on ESPN. And that was a back and forth. You know, I mean, that was a sort of an extended form. Like, you would get as many as 5 minutes total on a given topic among four people. And when Ride Home reinvented television or invented television
Infected television.
In these short little bursts of a minute 30 or something like that, Mike said, I don't know if this is going to work. I think we need to let it breathe. I think we need more back and forth. And I said, no, we need to get in and get out, because actually we don't know anything and we'll run out of depth very, very quickly. And so in our case, yours is the opposite of our case.
Because they're
going to let you go and be elongated. And in our case, we are better served by being tighter.
Well, we are zagging to your zig.
Yeah.
You know, because we are making a fundamental bet on the idea that there are a couple of things that are underrated, or at the very least sort of useful in an age when attention spans have sort of been recognized as so short. Like, television has optimized, thanks to Eric, thanks to the internet, it's been optimized into a certain economy. And it's tight, it's quick, we anticipate you're going to tune out. And right now, we're sort of betting that maybe we don't have to do that.
That
there's an audience in this world of great fragmentation for someone who may want what we have to ramble about for 22 minutes. Now, all of that is to say that that sounds like a terrible strategy if this doesn't work. But if it does, my God, we will be visionaries.
Got to clip that last piece off.
Also cut that out, yes.
Yeah, what do you think?
I'm of two minds.
This is very nerve-wracking for me. Tony Kornheiser and Keith Olbermann are picking apart a show that I have not done, that I have not even been able to describe.
Listen, when I did the show that premiered ESPN2 in 1993, all we got was the picking apart. We never had an audience because nobody could ever see it. And we were on for 3 hours with three hosts and 17 contributors, Jesus, most of whom had been fired by the second week. And the third guy was Mitch Albom. It was me, Susie Kalber, and Mitch Albom.
Right.
And Mitch used to come in about 4 hours before on Friday, he'd fly in from Detroit, and then we wouldn't see him again, which was a detriment early on. And then later became sort of like, well, then just don't have them fly in anymore. It'll make the show a lot simpler. But what my point is...
It produced the finest line ever heard on ESPN. Yes. Welcome to the end of my career.
Welcome to the end of our careers. Because, and I didn't think about it in advance. It just, you can't, I see this microphone coming, or this camera coming in, one of the original handheld cameras, comes down there, and I'm just thinking about exactly your point. We rehearsed that thing. They originally wanted to do one rehearsal for a three-hour live studio show with 17 different people. I said, you can't even get the mics clear. Somebody's going to come on without a mic if we don't rehearse once. We wound up instead, at my insistence, doing about 3 weeks. And it turned out there were 18 different executives who thought they were in charge of it. That's not an exaggeration, including the one who said, when we're on the air, you're in charge of it, which is the biggest mistake you can make with putting me in charge of a television show. So all we got, because the thing couldn't be seen, it wasn't widely distributed, and it went through all sorts of permutations where it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, three-hour show. And then instead it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 days a week for an hour. Then it moved to the mornings. It was still called Sports Night. We were on it at like noon. And so when you talk about having it picked apart, it's like I would recommend, my experience of that is you must toughen up to the possibility that you'll be picked apart before or after, because that goes with the suit.
What do you think? Because,
well, listen,
what do you think, short versus long? Interesting.
I was utterly refreshed by doing the show with you, not merely because of my privilege to work with you as Mike's fill-in, but it was, it did focus my thoughts, and also it it removed the daunting quality of having kind of, for whatever description you would use for this genre of programs, of which yours was the first, it was intimidating to be involved in it, because this is, to me, the thing that changed television for good and for bad, just like SportsCenter did in the 90s. Mm-hmm. We'll all have to answer to our maker for not thinking for all the way through. But it was encouraging to me for exactly the point that you said in 2001, which was, well, we don't have more than a minute and a half of good stuff, and this will focus us. And the thing that I noticed when I would watch you and see you refer to your notes was that the key to it is exactly that. There may be something that comes to you later, or while you're anticipating what the other guy is going to say or whatever, there may be something, or a line may appear, but you have to think of it as you have a dollar and a half to spend on this topic, and you want to not run out. And that's the approach that I had. And I had my own notes. And then you said, oh, you're a compulsive note taker. I went, no, I'm just copying you. And so my thought is, it's really because everybody who followed your show didn't do what you did, didn't put a time clock on it, and assumed, as television always does, if half an hour is good, 7 hours is much better. If one show like this is good,
let's get them all.
That's right. This, you were talking the history of MSNBC. There was one political show on it. Hi, that was me. And then the next thing you know, it's 24 hours a damn day. And it wore off pretty quickly. So I mean, if you got two engaged people who can carry a conversation on one topic or 100 topics in 22 minutes, it will work.
Yeah,
that's simply true.
And I should say, as a matter of my partner, Bomani Jones.
Oh, so he could do it by himself, too. That's the other thing, right?
That's right. So I am making a bet that I'm making a bet that I am going to get him to a place that he has not been in terms of getting to slow down and have conversation and be challenged and all those things. And I'm making a bet that I will be better in kind. I don't think you've seen you, the royal you. I don't think anybody has seen the best of us yet. And that may be because we are still getting our feet wet relative to our peers in this business. But I think this is going to be, at the very least, a worthwhile experiment that we are all betting on. Makes a ton of sense.
Here's what I believe to be true, and I don't know this is true. I believe that for lack of a better word, the chemistry between the people doing the show is extraordinarily important. I believe that what made Keith and Dan the best combination ever doing sports was a particular chemistry. God knows how it occurs, when it wears off, or any of those things. But Mike and I worked together for 20 years before we did this, and people always said, well, look, let's listen to them because they go back and forth in a very charming way. If you've got, and when we had success, ESPN and everybody else threw two people together because they looked a certain way. It didn't mean they had any relationship. It seemed many times seemed so very forced. Yours with Bomani seems to be natural. That if you've got that, you can do anything. People respond well to that because they, you know what? Honestly, they want it in their own lives. They want it. They want to see people who have it, because don't you feel that way? They want that chemistry.
The SportsCenter premise that we never expressed because we didn't plan any of it, because it's what you're saying. I knew Dan for 9 years before we ever did a show together of any kind. And then we plunked down in the middle of SportsCenter, and suddenly it was, hey, they're all shooting at us. Can you tell me when you see a bullet coming my direction, and I'll do the same for you? And that was the entirety of the thing. And the other idea was, let me see if I can say something to make him laugh on the air uncontrollably and get him to giggle.
Yes.
And that's it. That's stolen from Bob and Ray, my heroes of dual broadcasting, and everybody else I've ever known. That's the basic premise, was to see if you could get something past the censors.
Right.
And the other one was, can you make the other guy laugh? And then if there's self-defense, you're there. I think what Tony was saying to you was that you should now continue the rehearsals for 12 to 13 more years before you get it exactly right. But yes, what we had at SportsCenter was, I always thought it was the viewer saw it as a club. It was a club that had an unknown number of members. They were one of the members. And then it was just at these meetings, Dan and Keith tended to talk most of the time. And if you could create that feeling in which it's a club and they're coming in to
join you,
not just listen to you, but yeah, all right, we're showing up, and we know eventually we're going to get to say something in some fashion or another.
Not only, because I have that same philosophy about the podcast, not only is it a club, but once you get in and you learn the inside stuff, we don't ever repeat it for the next people. They have to learn their own inside stuff. When they get in, it's fine, right. But we're not going backwards on that. And if you and Bomani have that, you talked about rehearsals, you're doing rehearsals now. Mike swears, and Kelleher and Rydholm swear, that we did like 3 days of practice shows before we went on the air. I don't remember it. Mm. I don't remember any of the rehearsals because it felt so easy. I mean, we'd worked together. We'd been on sports reporters maybe together. It just seemed so natural and easy. If you got that, I think that's the deal.
And the point you guys both raised about laughter, I think one of the things...
Oh, make them laugh.
Well, because ESPN is in the middle of a culture war, I don't know if you guys noticed, but we are in a culture war. Yeah. One of the things that I think people...
Baloney, by the way.
Well, and yes. At risk of further culture warring, I will not comment further on the culture war that may or may not be a culture war.
Subscribers of the Golf Channel, they have lost more in the last month than ESPN. So what's the politics of this?
Politics
is called the business of cable.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
End of story. Thank you for tuning in.
Yes, I don't think people are canceling all of their cable because they don't like ESPN. That's my general hypothesis. But I think something that such people who may be inclined to believe that we are in the middle of such a thing may be underestimating is that we are going to laugh a lot. We're not there to preach in the way that I think people... If you look at various, I don't know, throw out whatever Breitbartian outlet, you know, how they may frame such a show between me and Bomani Jones, we're going to have fun. And if I don't really genuinely, authentically, sincerely, all the synonyms, enjoy being there for an hour with him, I don't think it's going to work. But the good news is...
You will.
We will.
No, you will. I love what Keith said. I love whenever I make Wilbon laugh, which makes me so happy. If the camera's on me, you'll see me turn to... Like the people in the crew say, yeah, you got it. Look at them.
The triumph of triumphs. And it happened to you and it happened to me. And I don't know that Dan ever did it to me, although Steve Levy did it to me once inadvertently on the air, was when the person that you're on with, especially if you're going to do it live, you get them to laugh and they can't continue until after the next commercial.
Yeah.
It's like, I am the champion.
It's so great.
And
so
then he'd laugh at that, too.
So great. I will take a break. We'll come back.
What a pep talk, by the way. My God, this went from searing criticism to an uplifting
forecast.
No,
you're going to be great. We'll be back.
Let's tell him how bad it's going to suck after we
We'll do that during the commercial.
Please, please.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is the Casper ad. You've heard me talking about Casper for some time now, and that's because Casper makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest at affordable prices. You spend a third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for quality sleep surface with just the right amounts of both sink and bounce. And I know they don't want me to do this because they don't want me to push the dog beds, but we have a dog bed for Chessie.
Chessie loves
that bed. And she loves that bed.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Keith, do your dogs have dog beds?
Yeah, I sleep on it with them.
Okay.
It used to be my bed, but it became theirs.
Okay, well, you might want to consider a dog bed from Casper. Yeah,
you'll have to convince them.
The breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Casper isn't only a mattress company. They also offer a wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Not only are you getting the best sleep experience, but Casper overall purchasing experience is hassle-free. They deliver right to your door in a small, how-do-they-do-that size box. Plus, there's free shipping and returns in the United States and Canada. This is a good product. For my listeners, Casper is offering $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Tony and using the promo code Tony at checkout. The only way to get $50 towards select mattresses is by going to casper.com/Tony using promo code Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Cowboy's Dream. The lyrics are by Mackie Humphreys, who's a Texan. The arrangement, the singing is by Nick Nasel and Rusty Rebar. Rusty Rebar wrote me this incredibly long note about getting a hole-in-one many, many years ago at Harding Park, a public course in San Francisco. And Nigel, when he handed me the long, and it's very long, it's very good, it's just very long, handed it to me, he said, you know, this guy played with, he got a hole-in-one with Hume Cronin and Jessica Danden.
Which would be a fantastic
story.
Whoa,
so I'm reading this note, And he says, I got paired with an older couple that I swear to God looked just like Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. That's not quite playing with Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy.
No. Really
and he hits, he feathers a seven iron and it, you know, and it goes in the hole and it's a hole in one. But the story, you know, it doesn't evaporate, but it loses a little bit of steam when it's just an old couple.
I think he should change it and say it was Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. I think he should do that.
They're not going to be able to rebut the point.
Not as
exactly. Exactly.
So if people want to send us their music, how do they do it?
They can send
beautiful music.
Jingles@TonyKornheiserShow.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And our thought is that we should put together an album of some sort.
Or at least start a record label. Yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. You've always dreamt about doing that, haven't you?
No. No, I haven't.
Not as much as I might think.
Do you have news for us?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And we will start off with baseball. You walked in, you said, so the Nats lost last night. No.
No, they won.
In fact, they did win. They won 2-1 in 11 innings. They got the tying run in the eighth inning when Archie Bradley from the Diamondbacks balked to bring in the tying run. And then Adam Eaton got
Not Adam Eaton.
I'm sorry.
Because Adam Eaton's never playing again.
No, that's right.
Adam Eaton started out 5-for-5, set out the next day, and now you find out Oberman's doctor just operated on him yesterday. He's never playing again.
The Brigadoon of outfielders.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's Matt Adams.
Disappears. Yeah, that's it. It's over.
Matt Adams gets the winning hit. And yes,
Matt Adams, good.
What is
I was wrong about Matt Adams.
No catchers, by the way. No catchers left for the one healthy catcher for the Nationals.
Oof.
Oh, is that right?
Matt Wieters got hurt.
Oh, yes. Wieters did get hurt.
There was
Lucky Severino?
He came in, but there was speculation as they went to extra innings that they might have to suit up Bryce Harper. And they went, this is crazy.
Ooh.
We're not doing that.
Bryce Harper?
Wilmer
Defoe.
Wilmer Defoe.
Well, he was a catcher for the first 15 years of his
Bryce
life.
Bryce Harper?
But you'd rather not have him do that.
Did you see the operation Yadier Molina just had?
Wilmer Defoe got the mask on, and he was the emergency guy.
Okay.
Yeah, so Wieters did leave with an apparent leg injury.
So they'll call somebody.
He's going to get an MRI on I guess today. And Adam Eaton, yes.
No, he's never playing.
Underwent exploratory arthroscopic surgery.
Exploratory.
Let's just see
find. We can't figure this out. Let's go in.
Here is the phrase that you don't, I can say uncovered a slight tear in the ankle, but there's no timetable for his return.
Oh, he's never coming back.
In the 23rd century. They released Miguel Montero.
Yeah, who they got from the Cubs.
Right, Rowdy Red, who was their big prospect, was suspended for PEDs. Jonathan Solano's on the DL. They signed, fortunately, they have as depth, Tuffy Goswitch, and a 71-year-old veteran.
Yeah, that's clearly a favorite.
And Spencer Kaiboom, who can't play baseball but has the greatest name in baseball history. He's ready to come up and take over.
Right.
And he has a brother who's also playing. I think his name is Boom Boom Kaiboom.
To David Price, who's had a bit of news about him this week. He turns out he has carpal tunnel syndrome. That was what was leading to his numb pitching hand. Well, they think it might be from playing video games. And he said, look, I'm not going to play this game Fortnite in the clubhouse anymore with the rest of the
players.
We are
so lucky today to have with us a millennial, to have with us somebody who actually, I have never in my life played a video game.
Not even Pong?
Nothing.
I did Pong and then dropped out.
So I can't even imagine how this works. When people talk to me about professional sports leagues where you watch people play video games, you may as well be talking to me about sitting on the moon within 24 hours. But Pablo, you've played the game.
Fortnite. And Tony, people in your office around you every day are obsessed with this game. You just don't realize
it. No, I don't see them.
And what's truly been eye-opening for me is
and of course, they're not allowed to look at me.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's right. There is a strong no eye contact policy in the office. But I have played Fortnite. I play Fortnite. And the thing that is truly terrifying to me is that I'm 32, and simultaneously too old for this video game. I'm terrible. I get destroyed regularly. I get killed immediately. It is a first-person shooter, or not first-person. You're kind of like camera right behind your avatar,
right.
And you're trying to murder everyone else, and it's kind of cartoonish, and it is addictive and fun. But the thing about the David Price story is that this dude was the one who called everybody nerds, right? That was his whole thing. You're a nerd. And now he has carpal tunnel syndrome playing video games, which is the nerdiest injury imaginable.
He claims that's not where he got it from, but he's just going to stop playing this game as a precaution because,
because
he needs a new excuse this year for not taking the talent that whoever gave him and making it what it should have been.
So he will pitch, though. He will say
he says
pitch.
He's pitch on
yeah, but every time.
Tomorrow,
but see,
right?
Now it's built in. Every time anything's wrong.
It's an excuse.
He has a terrible postseason record. It's one of those guys who you should have with your regular roster, pay him all the money you need, keep him all season, and then say, hey, regular season's over. Why don't you pitch batting practice? Well, what it's is not? It's like it's not worth it. And by the way, every time he gives up seven or eight runs in a playoff game, and either puts his team behind the eight ball, and this is not just Boston; it was true with Tampa, particularly in 2013. He then, if he gets criticized, he then complains about it. Like as you said, you're called a nerd. You're called a defeatist. You called an ex-teammate a loser who only pitched 11 games in the majors. What do you know about majors, about baseball? And then, as you pointed out, Dennis Eckersley, the Red Sox announcer.
What has he ever done?
He's in the Hall of Fame.
How lately were you elected to the Hall of Fame? What else? Nonsense.
To golf, Mr. Tony, the Players' Championship. Well,
do we have anything on Matt Harvey?
Mm.
Matt Harvey is now taking, I think I have this correct,
to the Reds.
The Mark McGwire position of, you know, that's all in the past, and we're not going back, right?
Two days ago. He's pitching tonight in Los Angeles.
In the bigs?
He's the
Cincinnati starter?
He met the Cincinnati Reds in Los Angeles last night. There's photos all over the internet of him being greeted by Scott Boras, the man who managed to get him from New York, where he loved the nightlife and shows and going to the Ranger games, a year-round resident, and got him to a wonderful place called Cincinnati, which is a wonderful place, except it doesn't have the things that seem to appeal to Matt Harvey.
That's right.
And they're smiling. It's everybody beautiful. Else he's wearing it's those Reds beautiful. Caps. And by default, because the Reds have been mismanaged into the ground by a general manager they just got rid of named Dick Williams, Matt Harvey is like the number two starter on the Cincinnati Reds, even if his ERA does not come down from 7.00. He's going against the Dodgers tonight, and the theory will be he's well-rested.
What do you think will happen?
I think he has not sufficiently recovered from the thoracic outlet surgery, and I don't know if he's ever going to be the same. That was what they said going into it. He made it back from the Tommy John surgery, and that went well. And he did okay. He was coming back. And then this thoracic thing is, you know, there are players who are still sitting from 3 or 4 years ago. I think it's close to what David Wright had, the Mets captain. And, you know, it's every once in a while there's been a David Wright sighting. And unfortunately, he came back and doesn't understand that it's not circumstantial, that he just doesn't have the ability to move. It's like my knee.
Right.
I have to go slowly up and down the stairs. And the rest of the time, I'm fine. He has to go slowly up and down when he's pitching. And he doesn't get it yet. And unfortunately, he's going to find out the hard way.
So I don't live in New York. How big a star was Matt Harvey?
It's one of the more fascinating stories. It really is a movie script, because I was sitting in the front row when everything went from Matt Harvey is going to be one of the great legendary New York pitchers like Tom Seaver, Christy Mathewson, or Whitey Ford, or Ron Guidry, in which attendance would go up because a guy was pitching, which never happens in New York. It's a hitting town. Always has been. And then we're sitting there, and he's thrown eight spectacular innings against the Kansas City Royals in Game 5 of the World Series in 2015, has apparently saved the Mets' bacon so that they're not down 3-1, having coughed up two leads at home. They're down 3-2, or the series isn't over. They're down 3-2, going back to Kansas City where anything conceivably could happen. At least they got to a sixth game. Instead, he talks Terry Collins, the venerable manager of the Mets, into letting him pitch the ninth inning. And at that point, the crack of doom sounds, and nothing has gone right for him since. And he was not only poised to be the biggest baseball figure in New York with the vacuum that was created by Derek Jeter's retirement, but he could have, if he had succeeded the way he had in 2014 and 15, or at least 2013 and 15, he would have been the biggest baseball star in New York, and the Mets would have then been New York's team.
I am from New York natively. I grew up in Murray Hill, which is now a neighborhood where young consultants and investment bankers go to vomit. And it was not that way. But Matt Harvey, like, that was the crew he would run around with. Like, from the perspective of, is this guy a true A-list celebrity? I don't know if he ever made it to that pantheon.
He got free suits from Tom Ford that I had to pay thousands for. Okay, that's my definition of a celebrity.
Fair. But he also reminded me of the D-bags I went to college with, who would ritualistically upchuck on my childhood home.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I personally never liked
symbolically, he sure did that here.
That's true. What else?
So the Players' Championship is underway. Day two of the tournament. Chesson Hadley and Patrick Cantlay.
Patrick Cantlay is from UCLA. I know him. I do not know Chesson Hadley.
They are both tied at 8-under as we speak. Hadley threw 6 in the early going. Tiger Woods in that celebrated trio that was playing yesterday did not do particularly well.
Did you see Tiger was even. Phil was plus seven.
Yeah, plus seven.
Phil was wearing, and Phil was wearing a dress shirt.
Yeah.
Now I'm told that Phil he's that's his company.
Yes.
I mean he's out there with that shirt because he owns that shirt. Because there's no other reason to be out there in that shirt, especially if you're out there in it and you shot 79. That's not a good look for the shirt.
Yes.
So how did Ricky Fowler do? He was in that group too.
Let me see. I'm just trying to find
Fowler. They're out this morning.
Yes. So I can't find his. It's
okay. Bad news.
Yes, bad news. There you go.
All right.
We'll edit that in later in the show.
Don't worry about it.
And the Winnipeg Jets, and the Washington Capitals now playing again?
Yes.
Preparing
the Winnipeg Jets.
We're going to do that in the third hour, right?
What are we going to do at PTI today? What are we going to do?
Lots of hockey.
No. You can't do hockey. No one wants to hear this.
The Las Vegas Knights are the greatest story in sports history.
Thank you. You can measure the amount of people turning off their sets on our show when we go to hockey.
No, I know.
You can do it. We can't lead with hockey.
That's too complicated for people in America. I know.
That may be the case.
It moves too fast. They want that slow-paced game called the National Basketball Association. So, I swear to God, that's what happened in the last 20 years.
Ricky Fowler, by the way, 2-over, even on the day so far. Okay. And I know you might be looking for a new place to move back up here to New York. I might find the place for you.
Yes.
This is an apartment located at 635 West 42nd Street. All right? They're asking just...
So that's right on the river.
Right. I would guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's also overlooking the Port Authority.
Yeah, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Just lovely.
For just $85 million, Mr. Tony.
Really?
You can walk in and think, well, what do I get with that?
Well, only Keith hadn't spent that money on a Tom Ford suit.
No. I sold this apartment.
15,000-foot duplex penthouse is what you get. But you also get two Rolls-Royce Phantoms, one a hardtop and one a convertible, as well as a Lamborghini Aventador Roadster. There's also a $1 million 75-foot yacht that you will have access to with 5 years of docking fees and a summer stay at a Watermill mansion. I'm not sure where Watermill is.
Watermill's out on Long Island.
All right. That rents for $350,000 a season and still more.
But it's $85 million you're paying.
A year's worth of weekly dinners for two at Daniel Belude's. 60. Oh,
yeah.
Is that good?
It is.
It's good. It's,
I haven't heard of it. I haven't eaten there. I'm sure Keith has actually
It's good.
Eaten
there. It's sort of become a chain place recently. But yeah, no, it's the original.
You mean like Sbarro's?
No. Ooh, but they have they have a Bolud Cafe in the Time Warner Center. Mm-hmm. Okay. They've branched out.
Okay. You also get a pair of courtside season tickets to the Brooklyn Nets. I know you're excited about that.
Can I just say this? If you're thinking of buying this and you can afford all those things anyway, what do you need with this guy's house?
Right.
Build your own house.
Well, the kicker is at the very end. You also, and this is something why you would probably want to buy this, two seats on the Virgin Galactic space flight.
Oh, you get to go to space.
Get to go to space.
When is that taking off, that flight? When is the first scheduled flight into space?
Right when Pablo's show, I think, premieres.
That's very good. Very good news.
All right, 2023.
Is that when it is? We'll get out of here. We'll come back. We'll find something in Old Guy Radio. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I know is true. This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is The Animals before Eric Burdon split off to go to Eric Burdon with War, where he lost his career completely. When The Animals started in the area of critical commentary, they were one of the great bands in the entire world. I had their first three albums. There's nothing on any of those first three albums that isn't spectacular. He was great. Why are we playing this today?
This is his 77th birthday today.
Good for him.
Yes. And I know you used to talk about this song. This was the song that you guys would run around campus.
Well, everybody did this.
Yes.
I mean, there's not a college in America, there's not a camp in America where people didn't sit around and sing this song. There were two songs they sang. One was Fame and one was this. We got to get out of this place.
This was written by Barry Mann and Cynthia...
Weil.
Cynthia Weil. And Barry Mann...
Mann and Cynthia Weil were the equivalent... of Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
Yes,
they were the same people.
Building, right?
Yes, yes.
And they wrote it, they originally wrote it for the Righteous Brothers, and then Barry Mann got his own contract. He said, well, you know what, I actually want to record this for myself. Somehow the Animals got their hands on it, were able to record it before Barry Mann, and this was
I am pretty sure that Barry Mann himself did a song that even nobody here, including Keith, is old enough to remember, I don't think, called Who Put the Bomp in the Bomp?
Yeah.
And I believe that was Barry Mann.
You're absolutely right,
who did that, if I'm not mistaken. So... we have, in the break, Keith said to me, This is like famous people in the break stories. Mm-hmm. We had said earlier in the show that this guy said he played golf with people that looked like Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy.
That's right.
And you, Keith, said he had a Joseph Cotten story.
Yeah.
And then Keith talked about his former upstairs neighbor was Lady Gaga, and Pablo has Lady Gaga stories. So let's start with Keith and Joseph Cotten.
This is the reverse of the Hume Cronin story. I've just started in Los Angeles. I was a local sportscaster. I was 26 years old, and Mickey Mantle was passing through town. And that's the reason I sat behind first base at Yankee Stadium was my parents said, this is the most impressive thing you'll ever see in baseball, just watching Mantle play first base. So even if he's washed up, so Mantle had that kind of aura to me. And he was coming through LA doing selling a video or something, and nobody else at the TV stations wanted to interview him. And I said,
what?
It's 1985, end of 1985. So my producer and I, we go to the Beverly Hills Hotel, the Beverly Wilshire, which has two wings that I didn't know. I was new to LA, only moved there three
months. One is permanent residence.
Right. But this was the hotel on the street, and didn't recognize behind it was a more modern wing that did not interconnect. So I'm up on the eighth floor looking for room 890, and the highest number is 820. I'm thinking something wrong. And I pass in the hallway the most elegantly dressed couple I have ever seen in my life. She is wearing a mink. It's Christmas season in Beverly Hills. That's not unusual. But she's got a floor-length dress, and she's wearing $17,000 at least of jewelry that I can see. And he's wearing a cape.
A cape.
I don't know. It's just like you left the top hat in the room, right? And he's wearing a cape, and I know him immediately, but I can't quite get it right. It's like I know him, but he's older than last time I saw him. And we sort of nod, and it's like that universal, you're lost, and like, yes, I am. Yeah. And good luck. And then I look for the other room and realize Mantle must be on this other building, and I'll have to go back downstairs, and the camera crew's on its way with the reporter from the previous story, and I'm going to have to say, yes, I don't know which part of the hotel we're supposed to be in. I'm sorry. And then I walk back, and the couple is still standing there, and they've been waiting for my return. And the woman says to me in a very, very elegant upper-class British accent, she says, you're the young man who does the sports on the television, aren't you? I said, yes, hi, Keith Olbermann from Channel 5. Nice to meet you. I was really pleased that there were viewers. It's like I'd been there, and my success there hadn't hit yet. It was nice. It was really sweet. And we watch you all the time when we're at home at Palm Springs. We don't like sports, but you're having such a good time that we enjoy it with you. And I said, that is the nicest thing anybody has ever said. And the husband here has not said anything, but she says, let me introduce myself. My name is Patricia Carlton, and this is my husband. And I hear, I'm Joseph Carlton. And I'm thinking, who in the hell is Joseph Carlton? Why do I recognize him? Well, we go on. Now they're walking to the elevator, and I'm walking to the elevator, and it's like, yeah, you look like somebody, but if you pronounce your name in one conversation, you said Torre rather than Tori, I would be like, it looks like Pablo Torre, but what? I say he said Torre, and I'm completely thrown by this. I know them from somewhere, and we get to the elevator, and I'm not just talking about Channel 5 News at 10 and the other people who work there. Oh, yes, he's very funny. We like him, too. And he's not saying much. She's doing most of the talking. And the elevator door opens, and my cameraman and the sound operator and my producer and the reporter from the previous story are all there, and I see the doors open, and the four jaws drop simultaneously, and it's not because they see me. It's like, unless it's, oh, God, we have to work with him again. And they all go, and I went, thanks very much for watching News at 10. I'm putting on the whole, I'm a nice guy, and you're a viewer, and we really appreciate your business. And they get on the elevator, and it's like, he's wearing a cape. And as the four guys step off the elevator, that's when it begins to dawn on me. The light bulb clicks on, the doors close, and I went, keep watching. And they go, and the doors close like this. And I go, hey, to my producer, Ron, that guy said his name was Joseph Carlton. That's kind of a British pronunciation of who it is. And the four of them look at me like I'm the biggest idiot on the planet. It was Joseph Cotton. I was like, oh my God, I met Joseph Cotton from Citizen Kane. And in 1947, it's all my mother ever says. In 1947, the president of the International Joseph Cotton Fan Club was an 18-year-old girl from the Bronx named Marie Charbonnier, my mother. And I have met Joseph Cotton, and not, it's like, I will never get a chance. I can't rush downstairs. No. Or, by the way, my mother was the head of the bank. It's over. I have blown it completely. So that's the reverse of the Hume Cronins.
That's great. That's great. And then, as I said, in conversation,
oh, by the way, I interviewed Mantle, and he was perfect for 25 minutes.
That's good.
All right.
Now just explain who you're. Upstairs.
We were talking about upstairs neighbors or something, and you mentioned
where are you these days?
Where am I living? And I said, yeah, it's a nice, I'm slumming on the address I was slumming at. And then I said, and my upstairs neighbor till she moved out, like in March, was Lady Gaga.
Okay, so now what are the chances of this, yes. Pablo?
Because
Joseph Cotton and Lady Gaga dated briefly.
The president of the Lady Gaga fan club in 2002 was arguably me. She was Stephanie Germanotta at the time. She was performing at Regis High School dances. I went to Regis High School. She went to Sacred Heart, which is the sister school of the all-boys Regis High School. Our dances were nothing to write home about. In fact, our dances, if you were to somehow travel back in time and visit them, you'd know there were very few girls there. Mm. But my friends played in a band, and their lead singer was this blonde high school singer. Stephanie Germanotta, who became Lady Gaga. She did not have a meat dress. She was not weird in any way. All I know now is that everybody who went to Regis High School probably tells the exact same version of the story I'm telling now, which is that she sent us all through puberty.
Did you think at that time, she's really good?
I thought that she was really good, but I had no sense. I have no musical foresight in this way, it turns out, because I was shocked to find out that she was the person in the meat dress. But she was genuinely talented. She was, you know, they sang The Doors. You know, like, it was a very high school thing.
But there's always somebody in your high school. There's always somebody in your high school. There are people in my high school. A dear friend of mine in high school is Jimmy Steinman. That name might not mean as much to you, but he wrote all the songs for and played the keyboards for Meatloaf. Those are his songs. Bat Out of Hell is Jimmy Steinman. And it's a show now on the stage in London, and I think it's coming to the United States. And those great, like the sort of spiritual heir to Phil Spector, the whole Wall of Sound thing. Some of the songs he produced, Total Eclipse of the Heart, that's Jimmy Steinman.
My go-to karaoke song, by the way, is that.
So that's Jimmy Steinman. So he's in my high school. Did I think that would happen? No, but there was a girl in my high school who, in hindsight, every time you saw her and looked at the notebook she was drawing in, she was drawing fashion. She was drawing people in dresses, people in skirts, women's fashion. Donna Karan. So, like, the people who went to my high school, when you mention her name, nobody says, oh, I can't believe it. Because that talent showed itself at that point. That's why I'm asking if this particular girl, if you say, I can believe it, she was really good.
No, I'm one of the people who looked at, like, Michael Jordan in high school, and I was like, yeah, he's right.
Yeah, okay.
He's all right.
Did you have anybody, Keith?
Two. One was ahead of the curve because he was like 3 or 4 years behind me. He was already a concert pianist. His name was Ken Noda, and he's still, I believe, a concert pianist. And that wouldn't be a familiar name. But there was another guy I went to school with who was 2 years ahead of me who worked on the newspaper and the yearbook and our little radio station, our half-watt radio station at Hackley in Tarrytown, which you may have heard of.
I have heard of Hackley and Tarrytown.
So we were. I worked with him. And one day he put an ad in the little school bulletin that was read every morning in class saying, if you want to announce hockey for our high school station, we have it opening. You have to get a tape recorder. And that's how I became an announcer. That was my first actual experience just talking into a microphone. And so I've known this guy since late 1971. And I recognized pretty early that he was as serious about doing what he wanted to do as I was. And I became his deputy at all of these three things and then his successor at all of these three things. He actually was the first person who taught me anything about it. And I said, yeah, I think he's going to make it. And I didn't know to what degree. His name is Chris Berman.
Wow.
You didn't know? No,
I didn't.
I know. So if anybody, by the way, and I love him and we're not very close, but we've always had like a B-plus relationship that dates back to 1972, which is pretty good. There's never been a significant fight, and we have a lot of funny moments, and we've worked together, obviously, and worked at rival places. I was at CNN Sports when ESPN was just starting. And
you could tell.
Yeah, because he was damn serious about it, and he was looking into what he could do, as I was. What in college could I do to further my chances of doing this professionally? And, as the years have gone by, you know, I've said it's exactly the same personality. He used nicknames, only he used them as pseudonyms for the high school newspaper. And he was, as I was, appreciably thinner at the time. But one thing I can say is we both had long, flowing hair in those days, and only one of us still has.
That's right. He does not.
But I know him 47, nearly 47 years, which is a long time.
That is a long time.
Birthday was yesterday, 63.
I should mention, by the way, that except for me, we have an all Ivy League room today. We have Harvard and Cornell in here today. And this is, you know.
Harvard did not let me attend.
Well, neither let me attend. I went to Harper College, which if you slurred it in those days, if you said Harvard, they said Harvard. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, Harvard. Yeah. No, I went to what is now Binghamton University. But I'm always awed. I am. I can see
you
this.
Are more fascinated
I am.
By the Ivy League
I am.
Than
I should be.
Jay Gatsby.
Well, yes. Here in West Egg. Yes, that's it. No, I concede that that's true. It's a bad trait of mine.
No, I love it.
No, it's the only value we got for our money.
This has brought me to where I am today.
So we haven't discussed the NBA, and we haven't discussed the NHL, and there's a lot of things we haven't discussed. I do want to bring one thing up. Keith knows this.
My head against the table.
Yes, because this is because it's Shohei Ohtani, who now is actually good. I won't say great,
no,
but good, he's accomplishing
good.
Yes, this thing.
He's accomplished it to this point. As I said, the longest anybody went successfully doing this since the 1880s, being a hitter and a pitcher, the longest stretch was Babe Ruth while he was converting from midseason 1917 to midseason 1918.
That's 1 year.
And he, at the end of that, he basically never pitched again. I still think that's going to be the outcome. I still think they're going to have to choose one because some of his pitching, it appears he is not prepared for the hitters. I mean, he's had some very rough outings against some very good teams, and he does not have a plan B, and a good pitcher goes in with plan B, C, and D, along with a catcher.
And you think that's because he is not devoting enough mental energy to
it? It's not that he's not devoting it. It's that you don't have it.
Okay.
Nobody has. You can't summon it. You can't be two places at once. Right. And that's what this requires. So I do think, though, in retrospect, I'm beginning to believe that he may have shorted himself in spring training and invested in all his memorabilia and autographs so the price would go down, and then he could sell them again at high prices in April, because he sure had us all fooled. And if you said, yeah, he deked us in spring training, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, because he looked lost.
Yeah.
And he looked lost until opening day of the regular season. So it's very impressive, and I confess to being...
And he's very young.
Yeah, but I'm 100% wrong on this. So
do you
simple
think,
as that.
I mean, it's hindsight, but I suspect that now a guy like Rick Ankiel would get a chance, no?
No, because Rick Ankiel is one of the victims of the Steve Blass syndrome. In other words, he became an outfielder because he lost, psychologically, he lost the ability to put the ball where he wanted to when he threw it,
right.
Which is what we found out after when it was Chuck Knobloch,
yeah,
who was
yep.
the turning point when he, as a deterioration of his pitching ability, or his throwing ability from second base, ended, climaxed with him bouncing a ball off the dugout at Yankee Stadium and hitting in the crowd my mother.
The president
the
of
president.
The International right. Joseph Cotton right. Fan right. Club.
Right. I hasten to add. Sitting next to Joseph Cotton and Lady Gaga at the time. Which odd, very
what a callback.
And,
my God, that was masterful.
And she, that was his last day as a second baseman. And it turned out his poor father, who had gone to all of his games in Little League, high school, traveled in the minors, traveled to all of his games in the major leagues, had Alzheimer's. And as the disease worsened, eventually, earlier in the 2000 season, Knobloch's father could no longer recognize Chuck. Oh. And makes perfect sense psychologically. Well, he taught me the game, so that my mind is going to try to minimize the pain by attacking the easiest part of the game. And I was postulating this to, because it happened that this error occurred while I was doing the highlights for the game of the week. So I see it in real time. I went, yeah. Yeah, he hit my mother. And everybody laughed. I went, no, that's, grew up in Yankee Stadium. That's her. Wait, they'll cut to her any moment. And there's a shot of her leading, her glasses are broken. There's a little cut. And they go, oh, it's they hit an old woman like that. I say, that's my mother. When they realized I was serious. And it was her. And so Steve Sachs was with me, who had his own bout of
yes,
this.
Right. Yes, yes.
And I said, and Sachs is, you know, Sachs is a lovely guy. He's not a rocket scientist. And he's never, this never occurred to him before then. I told him the Knobloch story about his father, and it's just, you know, the rumor was his father no longer recognized him, and this is what happened. He goes, yeah, you know, now that I think of it, probably when I had the problem, it was about my dad too. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, he'd had a heart attack. I was like, what? So now we have two cases in which it's the guy, the father, not just dad, but dad who taught you the game that you now play for a living at a high level, and then suddenly you can't do the easiest part of it. And then the Rick Ankiel story came out. I was in the dugout in St. Louis when Rick Ankiel lost the ability to throw
his
pitches.
Dad was arrested.
And then it came out a couple of weeks later. His dad was in jail for drugs running. And,
yes.
And it's like, well, now let's see if we got anything else. And Pat Jordan, who I don't like, broke that story. And Pat Jordan, in talking about that story, said, well, I was doing really well as a minor league pitcher. He was the top prospect in the Braves organization in the 50s. And then one day he walked 183 consecutive guys, something amazing like that. It's like, well, what happened to you? He goes, I never figured that out. It was right after my brother got his arm shot off in the military. And I was like, who taught you baseball? Well, it was my brother. And I was like, okay, here we go.
Have you ever talked to Steve Blass?
I have not.
Because, I have talked to Steve Blass,
and
actually.
And he claims he has a solution to it, but he won't really say what it is.
So I did a story about mental health in baseball, and one of the things that came up was, of course, this. And Mackie Sasser, the catcher, couldn't throw to the pitcher.
Well, he was like, just an idiot.
Well, in any case.
He wanted to explain that he had to go home because his wife was in contraptions. Like, for crying out loud, Mackie, if your wife were in contraptions, she wouldn't be pregnant today.
But I ask Steve Blass and I say, given what we know now, or given sort of the gift of retrospect, what would you have wished you had done? And he said, I wish I would have gone to Harvard Medical School and shown up and said, fix me. Treat it medically as opposed to treating it in euphemism. But it seems, based on your data collection, that maybe a therapist's couch would have been as useful.
Well, yeah, I mean, I talked it over with a good friend of mine who's a therapist who went, this is like
performance anxiety.
This is like the thing we tell freshmen in the second month of the psych major classes in most of the major universities. The only thing I'll say about Steve Blass was the story that I had heard falls into this category, that he was betrayed by a slightly older friend who taught him the game. And that sometime after the Pirates won the 1971 World Series and he starred, this betrayal occurred and he never could throw the ball on the plate again. So it's a variant.
It's all related.
It's an older male role model kind of figure who has taught you this sport that has become your profession. It's as if, another callback, as if something happened with me and Chris Berman and tomorrow I couldn't say good evening. I mean, it's that fundamental. Yeah, and I don't mean to mock it, but that's really the sort of, it's an A causes B causes C kind of thing in a psychological chain. And, you know, this other guy, Dale Murphy, couldn't throw. And I said, what, anything traumatic? He goes, no, I just wasn't really good at short throws. So I go, okay, fine. Then they made him an outfielder. But there's some innocent sort of unmedically or emotionally connected things. And then there's this rich vein of, I think we can figure out that Ankiel and, so Ankiel, I don't, to your original point about Otani, I don't think Ankiel would have gotten it. But there were other guys. John Olerud was as good a pitcher as he was a hitter when he came out of college in the 1980s. And there have been other guys who were forced to choose. My argument with Otani is I think that day will still come.
We'll see. We'll take a break. We got a jingle. We got some email.
That's again. Right.
And so Keith and Pablo are done. They were great, weren't they?
It was fantastic.
Let's give them a round of applause. They were great. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Some like Chinese takeaway, turkey from Subway, or hot chicken wings. Fish and chips, maybe a chili dog with some onion rings. Me, I know what I'm needing, and it ain't no ham on rye. Give me some New York pizza pie.
Better than Billy Joel.
Some say you will screw it up unless you fold it up when you eat a slice. From Queens out to Montauk, hear this sage advice. I don't know from CC's, but on my word, you can rely. Don't call it New York.
It's the great Joe Arrow with the vocal. The lyrics are by John Fitzpatrick and Bill Bardo. This speaks to my the bane yes. of my existence. New York style pizza. No, it's pizza.
It's just called pizza.
That's pizza. Okay? No, don't. CC's do not come around here.
It's New York style.
So, no. That's just pizza.
Yes.
Stop it. Let me thank Keith. Let me thank Pablo for being on the show today. A great show, I think. Let me thank today's sponsors, Casper Mattresses and Indochino. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review in terms of the mailbag. Jim Flynn, Colbert, Connecticut. Did you see Phil's shirt today? Looks like a guy playing nine after work. What's he going to wear Friday? A pirate shirt? From Dr. John Grantham, Herndon, Virginia. I promise I will take back everything bad I said about Luke Russert's appearances if you promise to throw it to break in the middle of his jokes every single time. Aww. It was great. I felt like I could see his ego deflate all the way from the Aww. Beltway. It is truly my new happy Aww. Place. We love Luke.
We love Luke.
We love Luke. We love Luke. Yeah. We love Saliza. Yeah, Keith may not love Saliza. No, we love Saliza.
Well, I love Luke and not Saliza. Have me back so I can tell you a lovely Luke story.
We love Luke. Jeremy Goodhart, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. On Monday's show, you opened a letter from a gentleman by the name of Eddie Plutzer. Eddie was requesting that you send him a shirt in exchange for the $12 he had sent to you. You declared, "We are not in the business of sending you shirts when you send us money, but because I'm going to New York, maybe I will take a shirt along for Eddie. I'm a size extra medium. Next time you're in Pennsylvania, could you swing by my house? I will give you the $12. Do you have change for the $20? Keep up the good work." From Tristan Vick, I've been listening in Frisco, Texas. I've been listening to your show in some form or another since 2006. I've experienced numerous milestones in my life during this time. I've graduated from college, been married, become a CPA, bought my first house, and celebrated the birth of my two daughters, all while enjoying your show. This morning, however, brought the greatest milestone of all. As I hopped on my Peloton bike to take my 100th ride, I expected the instructor to give me a shout-out for the 100th ride milestone. Sure enough, about 8 minutes in, I hear the greatest sound ever as the instructor calls out my username to acknowledge my accomplishment. Congratulations, La Cheeserie, on your 100th ride.
Oh, how about
Tony's that? Tori's probably the only one who knows what I'm talking about, but I'd like to think a few littles were riding when the shout-out was made. It was my own TK moment. All the best, and watch out for Peter Yarrow entering your house.
By the way, on that note, Steve Sands has just texted me and said, heard a lot of La Cheeseries down at the Players, TPC.
Good to know.
But also a lot of, wow, you were really rough on Tony the other day, weren't you?
He was killing me because of the Capitals.
Yeah, we're just telling
because I suggested that Alex Ovechkin was Tracy McGrady, and he finally gotten past that, and he went crazy. Now, he's right. Tracy McGrady was too extreme an example for Alex Ovechkin. But still, by the way, Michael Sands and I are now working on putting some events in chatter.
Oh, fantastic.
Some wine tastings, some beer tastings. From Curtis in Atlanta, I was driving the congested streets of Atlanta with my windows down when all of a sudden a green Honda inexplicably cut me off. I honked and we took turns displaying the TK salute, seemingly concluding an incredibly non-noteworthy traffic conflict. A couple of miles later, I pulled up to the next green Honda, windows also down, and heard the unmistakable sound of an old guy yammering on about Brian Trotz or whomever coming from the other car. Despite previously wishing he would drive off the road, I couldn't pass up the opportunity to connect with another little. I tapped the horn and I yelled to him, "You and Saliza can go eat it." He grinned and without missing a beat, yelled back, go La Cheeserie yourself, the collective web, right? It would give me great joy if you could settle the score by proclaiming the green Honda to go eat it, giving me the upper hand. I'm going to let you guys work that out for yourselves. Ken Fusen, Des Moines, Iowa. On Thursday of last week, Luke talked about seeing a giant rat in the middle of the sidewalk. It reminded me of my own harrowing encounter several years ago. As I pulled into the driveway, my headlights caught the sight of the most enormous raccoon I had ever seen. I instructed my wife to rush our children into the house while I courageously shut the garage door and immediately wondered who could take care of this. I called the sheriff's department and an officer gave me the phone number of a guy who apparently specialized in removing vermin from homes. He arrived in a pickup filled with various traps. He wore rubber boots and thick rubber gloves. Holding a cage and some sort of stick, he ventured into the garage. Based on the sound of cans hitting the garage floor, it sounded as if a ferocious battle had ensued. After several minutes, he emerged. He looked at me with pity and announced, "It's a cat." "Big cat," I asked hopefully. He shrugged. I paid him double after he promised to keep the visit to himself. It's very, very good, isn't it? What do we have here? Brian in Falls Church. I rode Metro today. Nothing caught fire. No one was trapped for hours. I actually got where I was going early. That Caps win was clearly more important than I realized.
Yeah.
You're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah to do it.
start all over again. Oh, it's been a while since I could look at myself in the mirror without seeing someone else. But today's the day, now's the time. I'm gonna pick myself up, gonna start a new time.
Never show you.